And on today's Windy City Careercast, it's Amy and Amy. That's right. Well, it's Amy and Phil Putnam, singer-songwriter on the show today, plus District 9 movie review from Richard Knight Jr. and the news and entertainment. Lots going on, and the summer is breezing away. Well, it's finally hot in Chicago.
Windy City Queercast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We're talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
This one, he's special. He'll take his time and do his best to fit in here. And I can't help but wonder, was he made for something more than this? Was he made for something more?
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 322. I'm Amy Matheny, and I'm flying solo today on the show. Everybody has so much going on. It's true. Mitchell has jaunted off to Louisville, Kentucky to do his fantastic Looking Glass Alice play. My girlfriend, who will be on the show next, on the next show, Kelly, is getting ready to whisk off to do some fabulous work in Kalamazoo. And Steven Rader's busy downtown. Coleman Domingo's heading off to L.A. Alexander Billings is heading to New York, so I hear, or flipping on the West Coast somewhere around L.A. You know, what's a girl to do when I have so many co-hosts and just everybody has such a big, full, rich life? Well, one of the best things I get to do is sit down with some amazing guests. And I do have to tell you that in the upcoming weeks, we have some really great shows coming up. We're going to be talking about the International AIDS Conference in a few weeks. Some really exciting information there with Jim Pickett, who I'm going to sit down and talk with about the conference. And we have really not talked about the HIV and AIDS situation in a really long time. And this international conference was a really great way to see what is going on, what are the new preventive measures being taken out there, and also how are our industries, our not-for-profits, our community efforts helping people live with HIV and AIDS. Of course, this conference was in South Africa, and that is where the issue is so prevalent and also so challenging. So Jim Pickett on the show in upcoming weeks. Also, we're coming back, not in this show, but By the Way is coming back around, and we're going to be having a conversation with our bi guy and our bi gal. So that, it too, is coming up in the next show. Plus, my partner Kelly will be talking to us in the next show. We have not sat down with Kelly in a long time, and she's getting ready to go away and leave me. Those are tears. Tears, tears. She's leaving me for a few months. And, you know, we have this relationship where when we met, she was traveling a lot and then back at home and then traveling and then back at home. And she's kind of been here for a while. So it's a bit of a transition for us as we prepare for her to be gone for a little while, traveling hither and yon, doing some fantastic theater work and teaching. So that's really exciting. And I'm glad for her, but we are going to get to touch base with her before she heads off on this adventure, talk a little bit about what is going on in her life and some exciting projects that she's going to be working on in the upcoming months. And also Ms. Cleo will be back. She is going to be talking to us next week. Just kind of getting a little end of summer. Yes. It's near the end of summer. End of summer review as we head into the dog days of summer, folks. It's crazy. Who can believe it? Labor Day right around the corner. But on today's show, I'm so excited. This is a musician I've wanted to have on the show, and many of you probably know him from Logo, as his videos have just soared on the charts. I mean, he just released a new video, and it's already on the click list on Logo at number one. So the timing couldn't be better. His star is rising. I'm talking about Phil Putnam, singer and songwriter. He's such a cutie patootie and very talented, and he's great. He's great. If all the other co-hosts start all getting too busy, maybe Phil can become my new lifeline. We really had a great time talking, and you're going to be listening to Phil's music throughout the show. Also, Richard Knight Jr. is going to be taking us to District 9, the summer movie that could be the sleeper hit of the summer. Is it? Definitely made with some powerful people, but yet a lot of unknowns. And what's it going to do? What kind of numbers will it do this summer? And also some news and what's going on in the theater scene. It's just really, really busy. And, you know, I know this might make some of you cry, but I'm getting ready to go away on a trip. I'm still going to be bringing you podcasts, though, while I'm away. The magic of podcasting, how that will happen. But I'm taking my first trip to Europe, so we'll be talking about that, too, in the next show. So coming up, Phil Putnam on the Queercast and all the bells and whistles that you come to expect from us. But this time, it's not us. It's just me and Phil.
Hi there. I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
And I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
You know, most people know that Miller Lite tastes great, but up until now, only brewmasters like me knew why.
Well, most people know that my friends and I are the most dominating presence in the Kalamazoo Western Division Level 3 Softball League, but very few know why.
Huh. You see, we add the hops first for flavor, second for balance, and a third time to lock in the great Pilsner taste by enhancing the foamy head.
Yeah, well, we don't need fancy softball strategery to win.
We call it the triple hops brewing process.
Well, we call it heart, Mr. Man.
We're on the same team here. I thought you would appreciate this new information.
I apologize. I just wish I had something as important to share.
Well, buy a six-pack of Miller Lite and you will.
Miller Lite brewmasters have to know the ins and outs of triple hops brewing. The only thing you have to do is enjoy the great-tasting light beer. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
Come to Chicago's North Side for the free Glenwood Avenue Arts Fest in Rogers Park, August 22nd and 23rd. The 8th annual fest features arts and crafts, theater, music, food, and drink on the brick streets of the historic Rogers Park. Kid Fest areas offer hands-on crafts for children. Take the CTA Red Line to Morse and Glenwood Avenues for a free weekend of art and fun for the whole family. There's more information available at glenwoodav.org.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News. Dr. Joel D. Weissman, one of the first physicians to detect the AIDS epidemic, died recently at the age of 66. In the very early stages of the epidemic, Weissman warned patients about changing their sexual behavior, but was often ignored.
Equality California has announced it would work toward a ballot measure to legalize same-sex marriage in 2012 instead of next year. Prop 8 advocates said that they are ready to take on the initiative's opponents no matter the date.
A Minnesota school district will pay a family $25,000 after two teachers reportedly harassed a male student because of his perceived sexual orientation. One teacher said the student's fence swings both ways, while another instructor said in front of other students that the boy enjoys wearing women's clothes.
In Tennessee, Nashville Public Schools and Knox County Schools will unblock internet access to GLBT websites. The ACLU filed a suit in May on behalf of four students and a high school librarian, leading the aforementioned school boards to allow access as part of a settlement. Approximately four out of five Tennessee public schools use filtering software provided by Education Networks of America.
In San Francisco, a streetcar dedicated to the late gay rights activist Harvey Milk was defaced with anti-gay graffiti, causing transportation officials to pull it from service. Placards of milk inside the car were defaced with the words fag and faggot. Milk was recently honored with the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
The Trevor Project, the nonprofit that operates the only nationwide 24-hour suicide prevention hotline for LGBTQ youth, has received a major donation from Harry Potter actor Daniel Radcliffe. Radcliffe said, "It's extremely distressing to consider that in 2009, suicide is a top three killer of young people, and it's truly devastating to learn that LGBTQ youth are up to four times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers."
In world news, in Malaysia, Dr. V. M. Palaniappan, a practitioner of complementary therapy, claims that gay sex and masturbation make the body more vulnerable to swine flu. Palaniappan claims that when one masturbates or indulges in homosexual activity, his body develops friction heat, and that produces acid, making the body hyperacidosed, giving a burning sensation while urinating and toileting, and making the person an easy target for H1N1 infection. In Malaysia, homosexuality is punishable by jail time and even execution.
Stopping in the African country of Angola on August 10th, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton met with that country's president, José Eduardo dos Santos, and the two signed an agreement aimed at fighting HIV. The pact promises an additional $10 million from the U.S. to help Angola confront its AIDS epidemic.
In Poland, a young gay man, Richard Giersch, prevailed in a court case where he alleged anti-gay harassment against a neighbor. The court ordered a woman, identified only as Anna S., to pay Giersch $5,000. In addition, she has been prohibited from using anti-gay expletives. Giersch claimed that Anna's abuse led to others to verbally attack him as well. Polish gay groups hailed the verdict, calling it a major step forward.
In Canada, Michael Candola, age 21, faces charges of aggravated assault and a beating some are classifying as a hate crime. In Vancouver, Jordan Smith was walking hand-in-hand with another man last year when they were surrounded by a group of men yelling anti-gay slurs. One of the men, allegedly Candola, punched Smith, age 27, and broke his jaw.
In entertainment news, the internet has been agog with rumors that singer Lady Gaga is a hermaphrodite. Some people have pointed to a video from a music festival that supposedly reveals male genitalia. Others have said that Lady Gaga supposedly confirmed the rumor. Gaga's manager released a statement calling the rumor ridiculous.
The recent issue of Rolling Stone that featured out American Idol finalist Adam Lambert is the magazine's best-selling issue of the year. Lambert came out of the closet in the magazine's June 25th issue. His debut CD will be released this fall.
Actor Brad Pitt told the Today Show's Ann Curry that he could never be elected mayor of New Orleans, despite a local push, because his platform would include same-sex marriage. "I'm running on the gay marriage, no religion, legalization and taxation of marijuana platform," Pitt jokingly said. "I don't have a chance."
Dr. Arnie Klein, the controversial doctor of the late superstar Michael Jackson, is demanding access to Jackson's three children. Klein, who is gay, has privately claimed that he fathered Prince, age 12, and Paris, aged 11.
And former Spice Girl Victoria Beckham has extended her stay on American Idol. Beckham joined Simon Cowell, Randy Jackson, and Cara DioGuardi for the opening auditions in Denver, Colorado, recently, but impressed executives so much they asked her to tape another episode in Boston. And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Want to take your tennis game to the next level? Midtown Tennis Club wants to send you back to school for its patented instruction program, Tennis Schools. Whether you're a beginner or advanced intermediate, Tennis Schools has a program to fit your game. Enrollment in Tennis Schools starts at only $105 and includes a four-week membership to the Midtown Tennis Club, including access to Midtown's fitness center, practice lanes, and locker rooms, as well as invitations to two tennis parties and instructions from the country's best pros, all starting at $105. That's less than $30 per lesson. Midtown Tennis Club is located in Lincoln Park at 2020 West Fullerton Avenue. For more information, call 773-235-2300 or visit midtown.com/Chicago and just click on the Tennis Schools link. Who said school can't be fun?
I'm Richard Knight Jr. with another Night at the Movies Minute. District 9, the debut film from writer-director Neil Blomkamp, the script was co-written with Terry Tatchell, and presented by Peter Jackson, no less, is a funny, violently gross, and wildly enthralling addition to the science fiction canon. The title refers to the Slum-like government camp located in Johannesburg, South Africa, in which a spaceship full of worker aliens, derisively called prawns, quote, because that's what they look like, end quote, have been quarantined for over two decades while their gigantic, though apparently useless, spaceship hovers overhead. Vice of all kinds has become rife in District 9. Multinational United, MNU, a government-contracted agency, presides over District 9, and to ostensibly quell citizen protests, decides to move the almost 2 million cat food-loving aliens to a new encampment, with the help of some brutal mercenaries. A featherhead with the unlikely name of Vincus Vandermeer, that's his name in the movie, played by newcomer Sholto Copley, is charged with handling the move. The idiotic Vincus is so annoying and stupid you almost smile when he inadvertently gets sprayed in the face with some alien black goo and begins to transform into one of the prawns. But once the transformation begins, the film turns into a race against time, and we begin to root for the dumb bunny who gains more courage and character with each change in his physical alteration. There's a real cinema verite, handheld feel here, sort of like Cloverfield or a war documentary, that gives the movie, much of it told in mockumentary style, a gritty, in-your-face quality that really helps. Messages and metaphors in sci-fi pictures are not rare, but the obvious political allegory to apartheid used in District 9 is particularly cunning and really resonates. The movie's like a weird crossbreeding of City of God, Alien Nation, and The Fly, but it really, really works. And this highly creative film nimbly outdistances every single blockbuster sci-fi stupid thing I've seen this summer. Can you tell I liked it? I'm Richard Dent Jr., and that's your Night of the Movies Minute.
Eight times a week, another 2,000 Chicagoans experience the musical phenomenon that is Jersey Boys. When this supercharged sensation first arrived, the Tribune proclaimed, Jersey Boys rock Chicago. And it has. Over 500,000 people have thrilled to the smash hit blockbuster about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. I love you, baby. Every night at the Bank of America Theater, a new audience goes wild for the story of four blue-collar kids working their way from the streets of Newark to the heights of stardom. So the only question left is, what are you waiting for? Discover what everyone's cheering about and take the journey across the country, up the charts, and behind the music with Jersey Boys. Oh, what a night. Jersey Boys. Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com for tickets today.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of August 17th, 2009, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Poseidon, an upside-down musical, will float your boat, says the Chicago Tribune. See the Jeff-recommended hit musical parody of the cult classic disaster film now held over at the Chopin Theater. For tickets and information, go to handbagproductions.org.
Signal Ensemble Theater opens their seventh season with Edward Albee's The Ballad of a Sad Cafe, playing through September 12th at the Chopin Theater. The owner of the Sad Cafe takes in a stranger in 1930s Georgia, creating a dramatic, then violent love triangle. The Tribune recommends see more shows at Signal Ensemble Theater. For tickets, visit signalensemble.com.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical, now extended at the Apollo Theater. Don't miss this show. For tickets to Million Dollar Quartet, visit Ticketmaster.com.
See what all the buzz is about when Tony Award-winning choreographer Bill T. Jones debuts his Lincoln-inspired dance theater event at Ravinia in September. Tickets are available at Ravinia.org.
About Bass Theater presents Flip Flop Pop, the 70s. Now in its third year, Flip Flop is back. Chicago's grooviest cabaret and musical theater stars dazzle in a gender-bent night of music from the 1970s, where the guys sing songs by women and the women sing songs by men, with Elizabeth Laidlaw, Stephen Rader, Ora Jones, Tom Michael, Patrick Andrews, and more. Visit aboutfacetheater.com. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hi, this is Lily Tomlin, and I'm on Windy City Queercast.
Fight scenes with no music, nothing to distract from the gruesome choreography of man beating a man. The violence here is precious and precariously made, but still I think that you'll be stayed. It's a little bit convenient if we're lazy at the game. It's hard to call it negligence when there's a tragedy to name. Exhaustion's coming easy on the heels of charity, and there's always some.
Well, I've been wanting to have him on the Queercast for a while now, and the time just seemed ripe because, well, you know, all things kind of center in Chicago, even though many of you listen from all over. He's coming to Chicago for another visit, and I thought this is the time to get Phil Putnam on the radio and on the Queercast. Phil Putnam's a gay singer-songwriter. I got his CD in the past year, and let me tell you, he is just... He's skyrocketing right now. His last music video, More Than This, many of you know and saw on Logo, was the longest consecutively running video in their history. And he's got a new video that's come out this summer for his song I'm No Prize. And we'll talk about more about that later. I can totally identify with that song. But he's up for Best Indie Artist of 2009 by Internet Radio Magazine. And we love the internets and the interwebs and all people who award people things on them. So it's really exciting to have him on the Queercast. Hey, Phil, how are you?
Oh, this is the Queercast? Oh, I got to go.
No, you just got to get really gay.
No,
get really gay.
So, oh, I think, you know, I think my gay flag flies freely, so I don't think there's any point of the day where I'm not queer, so that's good. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, you know, I want to talk about... I'm going to jump around a little bit, but I want to talk about that. Like,
sure.
Do you feel like you're really in the right time and the right place to be an openly gay artist right now, with the ability to actually be open and out and also have so many ways for people to hear your music and get to know you?
Yeah, I think this is probably the best time we've ever had in the history of music and entertainment in America and around the world. So I think that there probably has been no better time. And also just for the day-to-day life of an openly gay person in America, even though there are still challenges in front of us that are pretty significant, I think this is probably the most free and the most open people have felt comfortable being in their day-to-day life. And because I set the tone for my work with my day-to-day life, that's why I think it's the best time, you know, to be openly gay as a musician as well.
Yeah. You're a California boy.
I am. I'm from Sacramento, born and raised.
And do you feel like you are the epitome of a California boy, or
are you a fish out of water there? No, I mean, I'm not a fish out of water there either, you know, but I'm not blonde hair, blue-eyed, you know, Aryan. So, you know, I have dark hair, green eyes. You know, I'm the whitest man you've ever seen in your life. And if you saw me dance, you'd completely agree. But no, I mean, in terms of, I'm a little more wound up. I'm a little more intense. So I think I feel a little more comfortable at home in New York, where I live now.
Mm-hmm.
But I do love California. And, you know, Northern California is very different than Southern California. I think most people think of Los Angeles when they think of California, but that's it's like a different world compared mm-hmm. to Sacramento, where I'm from.
So what was your childhood like? Was it a musical family?
Oh, it was awful. My family's terrible. I'm totally kidding. My family is amazing, actually. So I had a challenging but very, very valuable and good upbringing. But as far as them being musical, not really. My mom couldn't carry a tune if it had handles on it. Mm-hmm. God love her. My dad and my two older siblings, actually, they all have, you know, some measure of musical talent. And so if there's any genetic inheritance of talent, it definitely came from my dad's side. I'm the only one of the kids to really take it to a professional level. But what's kind of cool is my third album had both of my older siblings on it.
Oh, wow.
So it was nice to be able to involve them. And that record was dedicated to my mom. Mm-hmm. So I was able to give her a record, you know, with all three of her kids on it. And it was very special.
So who were those young...
The Magnolia's moment, you know?
Yeah. Who were those young influences on you? I mean, who are the early influences musically on you?
Well, Bert and Ernie were very big. They're very big for me. Yeah. I would definitely say when I listened to country music all the way until I was 15, because I was the youngest guy in my family at the time, so I just listened to whatever the older guys did. And that was before country music got really, really crappy and really hit a low point as far as the songwriting went. And for me, it's all about the writing. Mm-hmm. No matter what genre it is, if it's great writing, I'll be engaged by it.
Yeah.
So up until the summer of Shania Twain, which was probably like 1995.
The beginning of the end.
Country music. Exactly. And so I was a big old Reba queen. Oh, mm-hmm. I love me some Reba McEntire.
Me too.
But I really started, you know, developing my own taste around 95. And so I really started listening to Tori Amos and Sarah McLachlan before she was incredibly boring. And, you know, those piano-based singer-songwriter alt artists.
So you're a lesbian, essentially. You're a big-haired lesbian I'm hearing.
My music is such a lesbian. And, you know, lesbians love my music because it makes them want to take baths and talk about their feelings. So,
you know, it's so funny.
Lesbians love baths.
Exactly. You're so funny because I'm Southern, and most people know that.
Okay.
But you strike me as very Southern, so it does not surprise me that you say, like, I love Reba and the good old boy country music. And I don't know where that tinges from you. I kind of thought you were going to tell me, like, well, there was this long respite to the South that my family and I had. I mean, that's why I'm kind of asking the California stuff, because you just don't strike me as a Californian in some way.
That's so funny. Well, I mean, I take that as a compliment, and, you know, both ways. It's nice that somehow I've been able to soak up some of the South without ever having been there. At least yet. I'm dying to go to Atlanta. I really want to get to Atlanta.
Well, we should just meet there. I know Atlanta. I'll take you around Atlanta.
That would be great.
They would love you
about,
in Hotlanta.
I've heard about Paris Decatur is a great lesbian club there. I've heard about them before.
Oh, I don't know them. I just was always hanging out in a drag bar when I was in Atlanta. Though I'm a lesbian, yeah. I'm far more of a gay man. So you and I could just switch roles. That would be good.
Not that I usually frequent lesbian bars, you know,
mm-hmm.
not my thing, but, you know.
You need to know where your fan base is, though, Phil. It's very important. Very important.
You got to know your audience.
Exactly. Okay. Talk to me about Tourette's and how that factored into your life and shaped your life.
Well, I mean, it was probably the most significant factor in my younger years, and it still has a role, although right now, I mean, if you saw me in day-to-day life right now, and for the past, God, even for the past 7 or 8 years, you really wouldn't know that I have Tourette's unless I told you, because it's so mild and sort of unnoticeable. But
when did you discover it?
It first manifested when I was about 8 and a half. And mm-hmm. then I was first diagnosed when I had just turned 9. And this would have been summer of, I'm not good at fast math, 88 or 89. And so this was when it was still very new to the medical community, and they really didn't know much about it. But it was clear that this is what I had. And, you know, it's a very, people can see it. They can hear it. I mean, you see this kid, you know, like grimacing his face and, you know, kicking his leg out and yelling fuck, 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 you know, mm-hmm. in church, mm-hmm. you know, it stands out. So it really turns you into more of a more of a novelty than a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it was a challenging thing to have to deal with, especially when I was a young kid. And I was a fat little kid anyway, so, you know, I was a girl that ate her feelings. So, like, it all bottled up. But for me, what it led me to do is sort of clarify my identity in a certain way. I mean, and don't get me wrong, it definitely had some really negative aspects at the time. But it also really forced me to take hold of who I am, simply because, you know, when you're an outcast, when there's nothing to lose, it's actually a very powerful place, I guess. So I didn't have any of the social cachet in junior high, which is such a lovely time of an American adolescent's life.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have to worry about what people thought of me because they already thought I was a freak. So I realized very young the freedom that's involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some good sides to it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine that. When did you know you were gay?
I love asking gay men this
because gay men always know somewhere around the third grade, and like lesbians, we can like be 50 and still figuring it out.
Well, I think that I see a difference between when you know that you're attracted to the same gender,
uh-huh,
and when you finally realize, when you can say of yourself, I am gay.
Okay.
Those were two very different and very separate realizations for me.
Hmm.
I've always liked dudes. I've always been into guys. Like, mm-hmm, you know, that's always been the way it's been from as long as I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you walk into a room, what's the first thing you notice, the men or the women? That's a very simple litmus test, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been men for me.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as when I fully realized that, okay, I am gay, this is what's true of me, and this is not just something that I'm struggling with, I think it was 23,
mm-hmm,
23 or 24. And that's a little bit later than most American kids these days. I love that I just referred to myself as a kid. We're being gracious today. I'm glad that I came to it a little bit later, though, that I wasn't 13 or even 18 or 19, because I had a chance to become sort of the first draft of who I am as an overall person,
mm-hmm,
and then incorporate my sexuality into that,
mm-hmm,
rather than realize it really young and have every piece of my identity form around the fact that I'm gay.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think in that way, some of the things you talked about with, you know, living with Tourette's helped you carve out a bit of who you were at a young age that other adolescents probably don't have. Do you think a lot of this made you more introverted or extroverted, and how did that manifest itself in kind of being a poet? I mean, if you're a singer-songwriter, I usually think those people are poets. There are people who are song interpreters. Those people may be singers, but singer-songwriters to me are truly poets. So when did the poetry start coming in your life?
Well, I think I've always been a writer. That's just been the one thing I could always do really well. So as far as I can remember, words have really been what fit most comfortably in my palm. I can't do math to save my life, but I can write you, you know, a sonnet about it. It's just the way that I'm bent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that ability and that affinity for words has been there for as long as I can remember. And definitely the hardship in my younger years, in my childhood, in my teenage years, really helps push me in that direction. As far as introvert, extrovert, I've always been an extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been very social, and I love people more than anything. And even when I was in my most difficult years socially in junior high, I still never clammed up.
Mm-hmm.
I never stopped wanting friends and wanting to interact with people.
Mm-hmm.
I never stopped interacting with people, period. You know, there was this one day where this particularly, you know, cantankerous, you know, bitch, bully, slut girl in junior high was making fun of me in front of the whole class. And
You can say her name. We love it.
It's completely fine. Her life at this point is already sad enough. There's no need for me to smear her on, you know, global radio. Oh, it makes me so happy to say that she's a loser. Anyway, so she was making fun of me, and I just said in front of the whole class, well, you're just you're just jealous. And we were in junior high, mind you. And she's like, why would I be jealous of you? And I said, well, because my boobs are bigger than yours. I was right. My boobs were bigger than hers. And I knew this was her big, you know, her big sensitive point. So the whole class laughed and laughed. And it was a good day. So, yeah, I've always been extroverted.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you kind of would have to be an extrovert to be an independent artist, I kind of think. I mean, there is a bit of music today that demands that singers, songwriters, and artists know they're the product and, you know, navigate their way through trying to get that product out there. What part of the move to New York has been essential for you, and how do you feel about yourself bouncing around New York City?
Well, being here is remarkable. There really is no substitute for being in the thick of it, both just for what it feels like personally and also what it does professionally.
Mm-hmm.
I had been very fortunate with building a pretty significant career from Sacramento, and largely through the magic of the internet. That's my big strength has been internet marketing, and really knowing how to connect with people and share my music online and build relationships there. But being here in New York, where the industry is and where people who do the same kind of work every day as a matter of course, presents a whole new level of opportunity that I've never experienced before. So it's the difference between, you know, trying for weeks to get a phone meeting with somebody at a record label as opposed to just meeting them and running into them at the gym, which, you know, has happened to me many times. So now, just because it's been in the sauna or the shower at the gym should not make a difference. But just because I've got all Jack McFarlane on their ass and stalk them. By run into them, I mean, you know, stalk them and their children. It's really remarkable to be here, and also just to be around other people who do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
What you said is about being an extrovert. Yes, it is completely vital in being an independent artist today, because as we have, independent artists have more power in their careers on the business side than ever before. But that also places a lot more responsibility on us. And somebody who doesn't have those extroverted skills, or those skills of self-promotion, or those skills of basic business, I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
You know, they either find somebody who can do it they can't, or they don't make it.
Yeah. Talk to me about Logo and the impact of Logo on your career. As I said earlier, your last music video, More Than This, it set this record on Logo, the longest consecutive running video in their history. It was number one. It was also 20, had 20 consecutive weeks in the top 10, 19 of those in the top five. Now you've got a new video on there. I mean, what is that doing to advance the career of the gay independent artist?
Well, I basically, at this point in my career, I think Logo is the greatest thing to ever happen.
Yeah.
Love her.
Yeah.
We love Logo over in the House of Putnam. And more to the point, we love the Logo viewers and fans that have been so ridiculously supportive of my work. Logo has been completely lovely from day one, so I've got nothing but great things to say about them.
Yeah.
I have great interactions with them, which has been really nice, you know, because when you get up to, like, okay, they're one of the biggest gay media outlets in the country, you think, oh, they're gonna be rude and they're not gonna have the time. Not at all. They've been fantastic. And so, yeah, you know, my first music video, it was just almost an afterthought to making Casualties, which is the album that More Than This is off of. And that's my most recent record. It came out in November. And my producer was watching New Now Next, which is a Logo video program, one day at home. And he called me. He's like, you know, you should really think about making a video and getting on Logo, because you could totally do it. I mean, I think they'd love what you're doing. And most of the male gay artists right now are just doing dance music. I mean, there's a small group of us that are doing singer-songwriter stuff,
right,
like I'm doing. But, you know, still, for a male to basically play lesbian music, like we said earlier,
yeah,
it's still a somewhat new thing in, you know, the national view of gay media. So I thought, well, okay, that's going to be a nice. I'd like to carve out that niche. You know, I'd like to, you know, burn that into people's retinas of a gay guy sitting at a piano rather than dancing in underwear on a box.
Yeah, you get to be like the gay Ben Folds or the gay, you know, Daddy of yeah. Apple Coldplay guy.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, well, Chris Martin of Coldplay, he's married to Gwyneth Paltrow. He's probably gay anyway.
Yeah, he named his child Apple. He's gay.
Hello.
Hello.
Anyway, we decided to make this video, and the goal from the start was to get it on Logo. That was the goal. I'm like, okay, this is when this video gets played on Logo in any shape or form, this will have reached its purpose. But I really didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how people were going to respond, and then it just, you know, took off like crazy.
Yeah.
So it's been a good ride, and the new video, which is I'm No Prize, was so much fun to make, that premiered on Logo's Pop Lab show a couple weeks ago, and then it's going to go up on the click list, I think. It's probably already on the click list by this point.
So talk to me about I'm No Prize. I really love this song, and we're going to play it as we leave this interview, but I mean, it's such a great point of view of, like, don't get so excited about me yet. Like, let me be a human being, you know, which I kind of love. I mean, is that really very autobiographical about you?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, almost all my work is 99% autobiographical anyway. So, but, you know, it has a couple of different elements to it. The real thing that inspired it was, this was written about, I think, probably two to three years ago, somewhere in there. And I'm usually a pretty confident person when it came to dating. You know, I don't really take it too seriously, and I don't expect that everybody's going to like me, and I have no problem with that. And I just, you know, I've been very open to dating and really not had a problem with, you know, asking somebody out or feeling attractive or whatever. And, you know, being a whore helps with all that. So... I could tell you some stories. Anyway, I hit this period of like 6 weeks where it was like a switch had flipped, and all of a sudden I was the most like whiny, insecure, bumbling, babbling idiot. Oh, no one's gonna love me. I'm ugly. No one's gonna want to date me. You know, and I noticed it because I was like, well, this is odd. This is not my normal thing. Let's write a song about it. You know, so
I want to know what age you were when you were writing that.
God, I think I was probably like 27, 28.
Okay. See, you're right in your Saturn return, baby. That was what was going on. Those are weird years. 27 to 30 are weird years.
Exactly. So, I think I once wrote a guy named Saturn. Yeah, I think that works. Anyway, so... That was the initial thing, but also, like you said about, you know, let me be a human being and let me be real. When I once my music really started to take off, when I would meet somebody new, I would not tell them what I did, or not like tell them my website or tell them where they could find my music for at least a few conversations or maybe a date or two. Because I just wanted to be a guy. I just wanted to be a normal guy before their perception of my music and the career attached to that started to affect the way they saw me. And I'm not saying that I'm some huge celebrity or anything. That's not the way I view myself at all. That makes me chuckle, actually. But I still understood that, you know, that most people, this would affect their perception of who I was. So I would kind of keep my music played down so that they could get to know me just as a regular person. So there's some of that in I'm No Prize as well.
Mm. It's such a great song. I really, really love it. And the newest CD is Casualties. That's what both of, that's what you can download it online on iTunes. You can also check out Phil at philputnam.com. And you're coming to Chicago. You're doing a lot of touring. I mean, of course, you're playing in New York City, and people can see those dates. For our listeners in Philadelphia, you're going to be in Philadelphia in September.
September 19th at the Song Salon.
at the Song Salon. And then on September 1st, you're going to be the special guest artist here in Chicago at Homo Latte, which is an awesome night, which is a Big Chicks tweet.
So excited.
So exciting.
I'm so excited to come back to Chicago. I made my first trip there in March and just fell in love with the place. I absolutely love Chicago. So
okay, where do you go when you come here?
I stay with some friends right there. God, what is the name? What's the name of that fucking street? The really, really gay street, Halsted.
Halsted.
Stay with some friends right off of Halsted. I went to Show Tunes. Is it JR's or RJ's? No, that's Denver.
Sidetrack.
my gay bars are blending across.
Yes, it's because you're in so many gay cities and so many gay bars and so many gay men.
So went to Sidetracks and Roscoe's and all the different places. And
you were at the corner of gay and gay, honey. Gay and gayer, actually.
I mean, I kind of at the corner of gay and gay in New York too. So I just go, from one epicenter to the next.
Speaking of which, you're going to be in October crossing the pond and heading over to Europe. Is that a first time that you've gone to Europe for some shows?
Yes, it is. And first time I've gone to Europe for anything. And I am so thrilled. I've wanted to go to Europe since I was six and I've yet to make it. And so I'm really excited. It looks like I'll be going over there a few times a year, actually. So it'll be nice to really spend some time in the different countries and different cities. And my fans over there have been really, really kind over the years. And I can't wait to get over there and spend some time with them.
What I love about where music is today and what I love about the World Wide Web and interwebs is that, I think who you get to access, even though you're hitting all these major cities, is that you get to hit the small town guy and gal, gay guy and gal, probably, feeling really connected. Not that you don't have straight fans as well. I know you do. Yeah. But just that that identification for those of us who live in a big city. It's one of the things I've loved about moving from radio to podcasting is that to have people have access to information and gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender news and entertainment from no matter where they live now, I think is so powerful. So even though Phil is coming to a lot of major cities and performing in a lot of major cities, I mean, you too can have an experience with him. He has a Facebook page. I'm sure he'd love to make you a friend. He has a MySpace page you can check out everywhere that he has been. He has a blog. So he really does a great job of staying connected with his fans. And I encourage you to go and check out his music. The website is philputnam.com. We will have that on the site. And Phil, we will see you in Chicago or at one of these other amazing shows that you have lined up. But a great big success. And stay on the charts there on Logo, everybody. You're going to have to start clicking and voting. But mostly, I'm just me. Like Christmas morning after all the novelty is gone. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now. Whoa.